But it was a good win for the Gardos last night. Angel Martinez with a massive grand slam to get the second straight win for the Gardos. And, whew, little bit of time to breathe here. And to help us catch our breath with the Gardos, we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And welcome on Al Pawlowski, Guardians TV host. Al Pal, welcome to the show, bud.
Hey, Nick. Hey, Jonathan. Great to be here with you fellas.
It's even better because we got two wins in a row here, so we can breathe a little bit. I know you're around the team. I know you've been around the team watching them trying to navigate the last couple weeks here. What do you think the last two games mean for this young team?
Well, I think it's definitely changed things around from just a mental perspective. When you start losing like they did and losing in some of the ways they did. I mean, last week in Chicago, you know, you get beat 1-0 in 10 innings against Detroit. It seemed like, you know, you should have won all three of those games with the sort of pitching you got, but they just didn't have any offense at all. And then finally on Sunday, you get a lead late, two outs in the ninth inning, your closer's on the hill, and a ball squirts through your catcher, and they tie the game, and then they score a bunch of runs in the 10th inning, and you lose. So then, you know, it starts becoming where, and this is true of any sport, when you start losing and you're losing in some strange ways or crazy ways or games that you feel that normally you would win, then it becomes, oh, my goodness, you know, how are we going to lose today? How is this going to happen? So when they finally got over that hump on Monday, it's like, okay, got that win, losing streak's over. And then yesterday, they found a way to win. And this is against a good Astros team on their home field who's also relaying the signals from second base to the batter. Now, I know it's legal. You can do that. But you've got a lot going on when you're playing in Houston. So to be able to win those two games, to put yourself in a position for a sweep today, the mental makeup of this team, I think, is in a much better spot than they were 48, 72 hours ago.
Yeah, Al Pal, do you think that people just overreacted over the previous, I don't know, 2 weeks or so?
Yes and no, you know, to be fair. Yeah, because this team was not as bad as that 10-game losing streak showed. I know that they're struggling to hit. There's no getting around that, especially the lower part of the order. That's all fair. But at the same time, you know, there is still talent here. And don't forget, at the end of the day, it's pitching that wins ball games at the end. Yes, you have to have offense too, of course. But when you look back at some of the really bad teams in baseball, the teams that you think aren't so bad, but for whatever reason they can't get to October, it's generally because of pitching. They don't have enough starting pitching. Their bullpen is bad. That's not the case here. I know the bullpen isn't as consistent as it was last year, but it's pretty good. The starters have been very good. So when you've got pitching, you're going to be in every game. You're eventually going to have some of these one-run games go your way, and that's what's happened now. So, you know, maybe a little bit of overreaction, but I can understand it. It's tough to watch your team lose day in, day out, and not get much offense.
Al, I bought early stock on Angel Martinez, and I've never sold it. Probably will never sell it. I'm of the young bats right now, especially the young guys that have struggled here off and on, who are you most confident will get it right and have a nice little run here in Cleveland?
Yeah, I like Angel Martinez a lot, too. I liked him when I first saw him when he was in the minor leagues. I liked him when he came up last year. I liked him when he came up this year. So I'm with you. I bought the stock, and I'm holding as well. I think that he's going to be probably that first one to become a consistent hitter. I don't think we're going to see grand slams out of him every night, but I think we're going to see a guy who is very capable of batting 300 at this level, who's occasionally going to give you some power, and who's versatile. Eventually, they might settle on one position with him, but you know he's got that versatility now, and he's so athletic. He can play in the outfield or the infield, so he's in a good spot, I think, for Cleveland. So that's the guy for me out of all these young hitters. You know, obviously, there's some guys at AAA that have a lot of potential. I'm very interested to see how they react when they eventually get to the major league level. I think they've got some very good, you know, potential, more than just everyday players down there. They've got some guys that could be all-stars too. Now, of course, we have to see how it plays out. There's been a lot of potential all-stars that barely even made it to the majors and did anything, but I think they've got a couple of legit guys down there, maybe two or three right now at AAA. But of the guys up here, yeah, I think it's Martinez. Of all the young hitters, I also liked where Arias was going to. You know, he still wasn't the consistent player that you wanted before his injury, but he's starting to show signs. I thought every month he took another step forward with becoming that consistent sort of hitter too. So for me, Martinez and hopefully Arias when he gets back are the two young guys that I really like with the bats.
Austin Hedges got subbed in as a defensive replacement last night. Is there anything there? I mean, is there something there with Class A and with Bo Naylor, or is it just they'll be fine and it just was a little bit of a mishap on Sunday and it was what it was?
I think he can be seen perhaps as a little bit of both. You know, when you lose a game like that on Sunday, that was deflating because you were ending the win streak against the best team in baseball, who's in your division, who's one of your rivals, who you were good against this year in Detroit. You had that game. You felt like it. You've got what you feel is the best closer in the game on the mound, and he really didn't lose it. The ball got away, and that's what cost you. Now, it's going to be magnified, to be fair to Bo Naylor, when it's the 10th game in a row that you've lost. That's really going to be magnified. However, you know, yeah, I think that maybe Stephen Vogt's thinking was, okay, let's get Hedges out there for defense. We're pretty confident that the ball's not going to get by him, so Class A can throw that ball with confidence. That's the other thing you've got to remember, too, as a pitcher. When you're throwing that breaking ball, whether it's a curveball, slider, splitter, cutter, whatever, you've got to be able with confidence to throw that ball so it's going to drop below the zone, probably bounce, because most of the time you're wanting swing and miss on that. You're not necessarily throwing your secondary pitches over the plate. You're not doing it a lot, at least. You want a lot of swing and miss, especially with two strikes. So you've got to make sure that who's ever on the mound has confidence. Now, that's Class A, and I mean, he's got that cutter and a slider that are going to go in the dirt, and that he gets a lot of swing and miss there. So you want him to have the utmost confidence in his catcher that he's going to be able to make that stop.
Al Pawlowski, Guardians TV host on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I know we don't tend to get into, you know, trade deadline stuff with you there, but that was really interesting. Former MLB GM had linked the Tigers to Emmanuel Clase. So if we just take the names out of it and we just talk about the idea, do you think buyers, sellers, what have you, do you think the Tigers would be on a no-fly list for the Guardians in terms of in-season trades?
Most likely, as I think, you know, any division rivals are, and especially where Cleveland is at. So let's say they determine they need to be sellers at this trade deadline. I mean, they've got enough here in this organization, especially pitching-wise. I mean, next year they could bounce right back and be competing for first place again. Who knows? I mean, if things pick up, look at Detroit last year. They were left dead in the water at the trade deadline, and they made an incredible run the last couple of months. And they also got some very good pitching at the end of last year, too, which helped make that run. So anything can happen. That's why I don't think you're going to give up somebody like Class A to the Tigers. It would just be too difficult to deal with because you don't just give up a guy who you know is probably going to be successful wherever he goes. He's in the prime of his career. Now, if you can get the right package for him, you know, as many GMs will tell you, anybody is available. I'll listen to anything if somebody wants to overspend. Remember at the time when they traded Mike Clevinger and people are like, well, why are they trading Mike Clevinger? Well, clearly they got an incredible return for him, and also they traded him at the exact right time. You know, if somebody comes forward with a great offer for Class A, I could see that move being made. However, I just find it extremely unlikely it happens within the division. That being said, if the Tigers come and just absolutely blow them out of the water to where they can't say no, well, as the saying goes, you can't say no.
Yeah, Al, that's my thinking, is like if they throw Max Clark in there or someone like that, and it's just like that's exactly the type of player that the Guardians could use and would need. If that cost you Class A, and yes, it would make the Tigers better in the moment, but if that's what that is, then I don't know why it should be a no-go.
Yeah, it's you know, you never say never. So that's a great point you make, John. And believe me, this front office is very good at evaluating other organizations and what they have and what would fit within Cleveland's organization. So they're never going to say never. However, if they're going to trade Class A to a divisional rival, it would have to be an overwhelming package. But that could happen. I mean, it's happened in the past. It's never like division rivals haven't made trades with one another. It's just rarer than, say, making a trade with, like, the National League West, where Cleveland, you know, has made a lot of trades in the past, especially the Padres.
Al, we, you know, one of the big things we always talk about is sample size and not putting too much pressure on certain segments of the season. But yet, the trade deadline looms there. You've just won two after losing 10 straight. You got, five games before the All-Star break. How important are the next five games for this team just to continue things in a positive direction?
Yeah, if they're going to be buyers at the deadline, I would say that this trend now has to continue because the 10-game losing streak did put them in a fairly significant hole as far as getting a playoff spot. The chances of anybody but the Tigers winning the Central right now is very slim. When you take a look at the lead they have at this point in the season, historically, they're going to be incredibly hard to catch, and probably nobody in this division catches them. So, okay, you got to look at the wild card. Now, with the extra team that was added recently, you know, there's a lot more teams that have a chance that didn't necessarily have one, let's say, 5, 10, 15 years ago. So you've got, you know, you've got a shot with these extra wild cards now. So can they win the next few and get it to within a reasonable distance? Because the wild card deficit is always harder to overcome than a divisional deficit, simply because you're competing against the entire league as opposed to just five teams, or I should say four teams within your division. So if you have to run down one team or two teams and you're within six or seven at the All-Star break, very doable. But if you're within six or seven of a wild card spot and you're competing with eight other teams legitimately for those spots, then it's awfully difficult because other teams are going to get hot as well. So they're going to have to win a number of games in a row or go on a nice run of, you know, winning 6 out of 8 or 8 out of 10 to now start to think like, okay, maybe we are still in this thing. And then don't dismiss something like Detroit did last year where they traded Flaherty, got what they wanted, go back and re-sign Flaherty. They might make a trade that at the moment looks like they're sellers, but the people they're getting back or the spaces that are created opening-wise actually could make them a better team in the second half. You guys kind of understand what I'm saying? That you could still make a trade of a veteran, but in some ways that might make you a better team because of what that trade does for perhaps opening a spot.
Will Wilson got the at-bat for Nolan Jones, who had 2 hits in the game last night. Jonathan Rodriguez got the at-bat for Schneeman as well. And it just feels like late in these games, I understand what they're going for with the platooning, but you feel like they maybe go to that well just a little bit too much, and maybe they should ride guys like Nolan Jones who are having successful days at the plate a little bit longer.
Yeah, Jones has gotten a little bit better, but I'll say this. Nobody on this team outside of Jose Ramirez, Stephen Kwan, and Carlos Santana that are healthy at the moment have proven themselves as everyday players, to be fair. So they're going to, you know, Stephen Vogt and the Guardians, they're going to take a look and say, okay, where can we get the best matchup here? So if Kwan's up, it doesn't matter who's on the mound. Kwan's batting. Jose Ramirez, same thing. Carlos Santana, same thing. But if it's just about anybody else, they're going to go with the matchups and what they say on paper until somebody can step forward and become consistent. And I agree with you, Jones. I mean, he had a pretty good month of June. You can see the progress in July. He's now in the starting lineup sometimes against lefties, so he's getting that opportunity. So if he proves himself as an everyday player, they're not going to pinch hit for him. But, you know, if he's still making outs, if that average is still low, if the contact is not where you want it, then they're going to go ahead and PH for him.
Al, great stuff, man. Excited after the last 2 days. Can't wait to see where the Guardians take this before the All-Star break. But you're always so generous with your time, and we appreciate it, sir.
Thanks, Al.
You got it, fellas. Good talking to you. Take care.
You too, bud. Al Pawlowski there, Guardians TV host on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We will react to what he had to say, and we do have to react to an unfortunate set of circumstances in decisions by Stephen Vogt. And the reality that comes with that in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. I actually understand the logic here, which is you're Nolan Jones. You haven't earned the right to not be pinch hit in that situation with how you played this year. Same with just about anybody in that lineup, not named Kwan or Ramirez. The problem is you pinch hit them for what I would say is AAA players, not even 4A players, and certainly not big league players in Will Wilson and Jonathan Rodriguez.
Yeah, so the real problem is exactly that, but I'll take it a step further. It's the idea that when you pinch hit for Will Wilson himself, and we can go deeper than batting average if you want to, but we'll just keep it there. He's hitting .172 on the season. Yeah. Like, so it doesn't matter if he's facing a lefty, a righty, a robot, or anyone in between, he's not going to have success. Like, so Nolan Jones, although yes, in most situations, I understand what he's saying, when you want a platoon to give them the best chance possible, that's if you were having a hitter that was of equal talent of Nolan Jones. And that's not even, like, Nolan Jones isn't even that great. I'm just saying you got to at least be able to sniff something competent before you can start to have that discussion in a lefty-righty split matchup percentage. Like Jonathan Rodriguez hitting .143, he's not good against anybody.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter, lefty-righty or anything in between.
Yeah, and I think this is the paralysis by overanalysis that I think the Guardians sometimes when they're in there, like even Vogt yesterday said it. See, I told you guys, this is what we were talking about. It's like, dude, it's been 2 games, and you almost gave that game away. There's no I get to talk smack when you're still 6 or 7 games below 500, and 3 weeks ago you were 3 or 4 games above 500.
Right, and if that pop-up by Angel happened anywhere else, it wouldn't have been a home run.
And I just think it's time to, like, okay, guys, the honeymoon's over with Stephen Vogt. I respect Steven for what he's done. I appreciate. I'm not going to discredit what he did last year. But that's the easy way. When everything's firing early and you've got 90 games of pure bliss to start your career, that's the easy way to start your career as a manager. This, you start out roughly around 500 or just above it, and then you hit the skids and you got to pull the nose up on the thing. This is the toughest. This is the antithetical option to that. And last night, and it's not just last night, because Steven has gotten, in some manner of speaking, a pass for the last 10 games or the 10-game losing streak. He shouldn't, because ideas like this were things that were sinking them even further during that 10-game stretch. I'm not selling Steven Vogt stock, but that was last night was crap. And here's the thing. There's one school of logic, which is you're Nolan Jones. Yeah, had two hits, but you can be pinch hit for. And then there's the more important logic, which you espoused, which is under no circumstance should you ever pinch hit Nolan Jones for Will Wilson or Jonathan Rodriguez on your damn life.
Yeah, like the splits are never going to make sense in your favor in that way. And I tend to think a lot of this stuff more comes from the front office than it does Vogt. Because we've seen them play with the platooning for years. And I would imagine part of the reason why they liked Vogt as a hire to begin with is because he was going to get on board with that. Like the idea that they like to platoon. And Antonetti and Chernoff, they have lineups they like to set. And then they'll tell you ahead of the game, this is what we like to do and this is how we want to see it played out.
I can't give him the Peterlin pass. I can't. At some point, you got to be your own man. I agree with you, by the way, on the overarching point that I think Vogt is more flexible than Tito, and I think that's something they were looking for because I think at some point there became tension, and not like we don't like each other, but tension between the front office and Tito.
Look and see how baseball is going these days, though. And now more than ever, and really in the last couple of years, it's really been magnified. The front offices have such a say in the day-to-day and the inning-to-inning that it just never really existed 10, 20, 15 years ago.
You were spot on. You were spot on. But in that moment, like Steven Vogt, every manager in baseball does have the ability to say, okay, I know what we'd normally do here. This isn't a normal situation, and pivot out. And if he doesn't, then Steven is too much of a shill for the front office.
Well, and that's where a feel has to come in some parts of this game, right? And that's where even like Nolan Jones, there's no justifying Will Wilson in that spot. But when Nolan Jones has two hits already in the game, I don't know about you, Nick. I do believe in the idea that sometimes just players have good days and bad days, and they're seeing the ball really well. I thought it was funny that that Rocchio two nights ago after he had the game-winning hit was like, those first two pitches I did not see well at all. It's like, I wouldn't tell people that, by the way.
I would. I love it. We need more honesty like that in baseball.
If I'm Rocchio, I'd be like, no, I saw every pitch great, and then I hit the one that was the best for me. He's like, I didn't see those pitches good at all. Okay, then. That's like a guessing game at the plate. It's like a carnival game for Rocchio all of a sudden. But like I do think in baseball, I think there's definitely better days than worse, and I think there's better days for when you see the ball and when you don't see the ball. And like Nolan Jones in that spot, if it's a righty, if it's a lefty, I got faith that Nolan Jones is going to be able to come through.
And listen, I don't want to put too much on this because this is like the ancillary point I'd like to make. The team clearly was responding to Nolan. I can't remember if it was his first hit or second hit when he was at second base and he did the little shimmy.
Oh, yeah. That was a weird celebration, but I liked them doing it.
It was, but you could tell the clubhouse was eating it up.
He did like a sexual gesture at the end there.
I got to say.
Did you see that?
Yeah, you boys got it. Well done, Nolan Jones.
He did have some aura.
He did. But even that, like that kind of goes along with your points. Not only is he seeing it better, he's the whole point of where this offense has been is they do not have an environment conducive to guys succeeding. Meaning there's so much youth and all the guys are struggling with the same thing that you just, I mean, Hosey and Kwan can only carry you so much.
Yeah.
Vibes were all the way down. Aura points were all the way down. And so when you then go, hey, you've come up big for us today. This is the best game you've had in weeks, even though he had a hit the night before. Thank you. We're going to sit your ass for Will Wilson. I mean, Schneeman
had the two RBIs, and then he gets sat for Jonathan Rodriguez, who continues to not hustle.
This is supposed to be Steven Vogt's forte. You're a former player. You know how those little things do matter when you're not winning. And by the way, that's exactly why last night was a huge win, whether they lose today or not. Because the way you won, you made a lot of mistakes, and you got bailed out by Angel Martinez. That win can matter something. That win, that the last two wins can mean something to you because you're getting yourself out of your funk, even though it takes more than two games to do that. But Steven Vogt, multiple times in the last 3 weeks, has cost them in situations like that. And unfortunately, last night was the first time it didn't cost them a damn game, or was the final final straw for that. But you have to know when to get out of your own way or get out of the front office's way. And again, no one's calling for him to be fired. But Steven Vogt has to learn, in that moment, don't hurt.
I just feel like they just too many times. If I was playing for them, I'd be walking on eggshells.
Yes, I think they are. I think you see it.
Well, I think about it. Like, I want to take another example further, right? Like, just the whole situation that's weird that's going on with Austin Hedges and Klasse and Bo Naylor. So Bo Naylor makes the mistake in the Sunday game and the pass ball and everything that happened there. I got it, right? It cost you a game. But now all of a sudden, Austin Hedges is just in on any time Klasse pitches late in these games now. Yeah. Like that was it. Now, so Bo Naylor just cannot catch for Klasse. Klasse doesn't trust him anymore. Or is that Steven Vogt saying, I don't trust him anymore? Like, it's just it's weird. It's odd I get it. It was not great by Bo Naylor. No one's trying to make an excuse for Bo, but Bo's still a really good defensive catcher. And then to say you made one mistake in a game that cost us our 10th loss in a row, so now we just don't trust you anymore?
All right, I'll go full into the conspiracy theory. I think it's 100% Emmanuel Clase.
It might be.
I don't think it's Vogt. Vogt is a former catcher, and Vogt is defended.
But see what that does, though. Like for Bo Naylor in that moment to be like, so I make one mistake, and Klasse just doesn't trust me at all.
I don't
even know that I would bend to that one if I was them. I'd be like, no. Like if we made the calls in that decision. This isn't Greg Maddux in the 90s.
Klasse's right on this.
I don't know. Yeah, no, I don't know. Because it's not like Bo's a bad catcher. Bo, in every advanced catching metric that you have from a defensive standpoint, is really solid.
Yeah, he is. But the problem is when the mistakes happen. Nobody gives a rip if that happens in the third inning. They've been happening late in games, and they've been careless mistakes. They haven't been like, oh, that's a tough pitch. Steven Vogt defending the one, I think it was a sinker in the dirt that went between his legs during the Tigers game. Oh, it's the toughest pitch to block. No, it's not. And you know that's a lie as a catcher. You damn well know that's not the toughest pitch. So I think it's 100% Klasse, and I think Klasse is 100% right.
It's got to be absolutely demoralizing to be a catcher in that spot. One mistake, and then Klasse gets to switch you out for Hedges.
Yeah, remember.
I don't know that that.
Learn your damn lesson.
Again, this isn't Greg Maddux in the 90s, where all these guys get to have their own personal catchers, and they get to have their own everything.
He's the most elite closer in baseball. If anyone has that ability to make
probably,
that call.
And he's probably going
to
be traded in 2 weeks.
That's fine, I don't know. And as long as he's here, if the best pitcher on your staff, and he's better than any of the starters are at what he does, if the best pitcher says, I don't trust this guy to block a simple-ass ball in the dirt. I'm not trying to hammer Bo, but he's too much of a veteran now. He's not the rookie anymore. He's the third or fourth most experienced player in the lineup.
But Vogt on Monday had the quote out, and it was everywhere. The idea that this was not a transitional thing. This was not going to be something they consistently do. And then they went again to it last night. So again, that's where it gets a little confusing. It's like, did they make the switch? Did they not make the switch? Is this something Klasse wants, or is this something they're just trying out for a couple games? And then if Klasse gets comfortable with it, it becomes the status quo.
Oh, I think this is. Well, listen, Emmanuel can always go back on it. Right? I mean, you can regain your trust in Bo Naylor if you're Emmanuel. But yeah, absolutely. It should be the status quo. You cannot lose games because your catcher can't block a damn ball in the dirt. Like, if you're going to hit 170, then you better be able to block that ball. Because here's the thing, it's happened too many times. And I feel for Emmanuel, who, by the way, is not the same guy he was last year. So he's trying to get himself back to his 2024 form, or I think it was 2022 when he was also this dominant. And you cannot have the game impacted like that, because you can go from Emmanuel Clase to Joe Borowski in three pitches if your catcher isn't doing the one thing he's supposed to do. So listen.
I don't know.
Steven Vogt doesn't get a pass for that crap last night, and Bo Naylor doesn't either. Bo should not be hitting 175.
No, Bo's got to be better. There's no question. But defensively, he really is not the issue that I think you think he is. He had the one big mistake, and now they hit the eject button.
It's been multiple times, though, over the last 3 weeks late in the game. When it happens,
I'm not thinking of another example. Do you have another example on the top of your head?
There was literally an identical passed ball within the last 3 weeks. I can't remember which game it was, because I was on Michigan Standard Time. But there's been two passed balls late in games that have been gimmies. I don't want to say gimmies because that's not fair. Catching is very, very hard.
Even the Tigers game, I wouldn't call that one a gimme, but that is what it is.
It's not the toughest play you're going to make as a catcher. It's a play that you should routinely make.
But to sacrifice it for Austin Hedges, of all people, who's not going to get a hit if he does end up coming up. And on top of it, I think the message it sends to Bo Naylor is the sense of, we are giving up on you in many ways.
No, I think
it's a bad message.
I think the message is, you're a damn professional. You're one of the leaders of this team. And by the way, there was a third play, the throw home, where Bo was looking to Idaho.
Well, that's the one I isolated out on that one. Now, that one, if you want to pull him in that game, in that moment, I would totally do that. But that was while the play was going on. That had nothing to do with him with Class A and being able to catch a ball or
not. That's three heads-up strikes in 3 weeks.
He's got one pass ball on the year so far.
Yeah, that just because they didn't mark it a pass ball. It might have been marked a wild pitch. I really cannot remember which game it was.
He's got a 991 fielding percentage as a catcher.
No, he's good
overall.
Got
one pass ball on the season.
But when you make your mistakes matter. And if Bo can't handle that.
I just thought it was too reactionary off of one play.
Oh, I'm telling you right now. And this is the deference I will give to the Guardians, even as I excoriate Stephen Vogt right now. The thing that I'll give them is they are painfully precious and patient with their players. So for this to be happening, it's more than just a one-time thing. And again, there's just too many moments where the catcher, who if you have a lot of young guys in the field, that guy has to be the guy talking to everybody. That guy's the leader on the field. And when you make simple, stupid mistakes, Bo's made one too many. And he has not accomplished enough to not get written out of games at the end of games. And by the way, you and I are simpatico. I don't ever want to see Austin Hedges with a game on the line and the bat in his hand. To me, it is the opposite of Viagra. All right? It is the worst. It's Michael Martinez 2.0.
If this is the beginning of Bo, then it's the beginning of Bo, but that's kind of what it's signaling.
But the point is, no, I don't think so.
Because
you can't come back from this. But Bo, you're a professional. You got to make those plays because your team needs you to, and when they happen matters. And when you're down in a game and you have a no heads up play, Bo, these things matter. And I think the Guardians have been patient with Bo on a lot of fronts. So I'm not trying to kill him, because I still believe Bo can be really good. But like, meaning on the offensive side of the ball too.
But then you're punishing him in the name of Austin Hedges. You're making your team worse in the moment in a lesson.
Not defensively, you're not.
In a lesson, well, I mean, Austin Hedges is a fine catcher. From a defensive standpoint, I'm not going to drag him from that perspective. But like, it's not as if Bo Naylor is awful defensively. By many metrics that I looked at, he's very good defensively.
216-474-0092. Is there any point where? You know what? We'll ask this. Is the honeymoon over with Stephen Vogt? Because that's what I felt last night watching it. It was you're too smart. You know baseball too much. You know how being a baseball player works too much to get in your own damn way. And the thing that is owed to LeBron James in 5 minutes on 92.3, The Fan. Did you see the Evan Sidery of Forbes report about expansion of the NBA?
Sounded like you made up a name there.
So the funny thing is,
this guy also do AI projections too, or no?
I didn't. He's got a very tight simulation.
Okay.
Nice little number there. A lot of analytics.
Proprietary numbers, yeah.
Ooh-row. So he's with Forbes. I think he used to be with like Hoops Hype or something like that. So he's reporting that the buzz around the NBA continues to build, that LeBron is that Las Vegas is a favorite for an NBA expansion team in the next couple years, mm-hmm. and that LeBron, post-retirement, or as he leads up to retirement, is working with partners to make a compelling bid.
Yeah. So like, what I've always believed about this is that this would be LeBron's gold watch. I've told you this before, but I believe it to be true. And now you know the MJ inside and out better than I do.
By the way, the answer was Full Metal Jacket, for the love of God. Thank you to everyone on Twitter. Good God. Go ahead.
When MJ got the Hornets, what was that reaction like?
It was a sweetheart deal, and oh my God, we finally have our first former player as an NBA owner.
But it was done with the idea that this was MJ's gold watch. You've done everything for the NBA. This was the NBA's way of saying, thank you for all you did for the league. Thank you for the massive numbers that you got us. Thank you for making 90s basketball what it was. And so if the NBA's response to adding a team in Las Vegas is, thank you, LeBron, for saving us for 20 years, I think that's an appropriate response.
What's wild about this is, though, in Charlotte, Michael took over. I mean, the Hornets were not financially solvent, and Bob Johnson, who had owned the team, was in a very bad situation where there were fears about making payroll. So, like, you can make the claim, even though he was a god-awful owner on the court, Michael Jordan literally saved basketball in Charlotte, and he brought in some of that Nike infrastructure of some of their business guys. So that was a market that the NBA had already left. That was we need a Hail Mary and we need somebody with a big name to come in there because not a damn thing. And the optics of Bob Johnson at that point was the only African-American NBA owner. So there was another reason to kind of gift it to Michael. Whereas with Las Vegas, like this will be the crown jewel of the NBA because they've put so much emphasis on the Las Vegas market. And that is just the hottest market to put a team in. And that's where it's interesting because I'll tell you this. They gave Michael a absolute hometown discount on the Hornets.
Yeah.
I do not buy for 1 second there will be a LeBron discount. He will be paying full price on that.
So I think both of them get their gold watches in the form of this, but I think the difference there between MJ and LeBron is it felt like to me, if the league didn't do this with MJ, you weren't going to hear from MJ ever again. Like MJ wasn't going to, obviously he's doing that analyst role that he's starting to pick up and he's going to try to figure out what he can do with the NBC on the NBA on NBC. Maybe that would have always come, but for that little stretch there, you know what Michael was so interested in doing? He wanted to gamble, he wanted to golf, he wanted to fish, and he wanted to be away from basketball. And so I always thought that was smart to like keep the premier player around the sport in any way. Well, all right, make him the owner of the team and reward him in such a fashion. Whereas LeBron, they don't have to worry about LeBron just disappearing.
Yeah.
And like LeBron's not going anywhere. He'll be involved in a lot of things if he's an owner or not an owner.
The timing's also going to be super interesting because I think it was 6 or 7 years between Michael's retirement and him taking over the Hornets.
Mm-hmm.
And LeBron, I mean, LeBron could play the next 2 or 3 years and step right into ownership
later. It seems like they're waiting on LeBron to actually retire before they start this expansion.
And the truth is, there are very, 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 very seldom players or athletes or whatever that I will ever say this. The NBA, to your gold watch analogy, the NBA owes it to LeBron.
For sure.
And it just, the reality is,
carried him for 20 years.
Well, not just that. I mean, they've had, Kobe is a global icon. Steph, global icon. But no, but I mean, there's been two NBA players. Well, I'll throw in Magic on this one, but he was a little ahead of the game and his net worth has really driven the last probably 15 years. But there have been three players that have repositioned NBA players and how people think about them from a business perspective. It's Magic, it's Michael, and it's LeBron. Everybody else is doing well because you're making $400 million in your career. But
But you mentioned Magic. He had to own a million Starbucks. He had to buy a million different movie theaters. He had to hustle and become his own basically just business icon and build up his fortune that way. Whereas the soft landing for Michael, and Michael had the Nike money. He didn't need it. But the soft landing for Michael was having the team. And for LeBron, again, he's worth over $1 billion now. He doesn't need it, but it is the idea that you get to be involved in the game and you own the team and you have an investment there. Like it's a cool thing for the sport in many ways.
216-474-0092. I also think it matters that Michael has sold out of the Hornets, and that leaves a very, very wide open space.
Did he cover gambling debts? Did he not cover gambling debts? I don't know. You tell me.
I think he just got sick of being really bad at being an owner. And everybody in Charlotte sang it because he just couldn't run from it. Does the NBA owe LeBron James a franchise? I think we agree on it, and I think the timing of it is what makes it most interesting. And Myles Garrett given more kudos, and it doesn't happen in Cleveland. That's coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.